Hello, and welcome to Re-energize. This is a place to discover more about emerging tech and offshore renewables and how we will meet our future energy needs. My name is Laura Fairley, Innovation Manager here at ORE Catapult, the UK's leading research and innovation centre for offshore renewables. Today, are we talking about inclusivity of the offshore renewable energy sector with some specific topics on the key challenges faced by the industry to promote a more diverse workforce. In this episode, I'm joined by Isla Robb, Managing Director at Opergy Scotland and founder of Full Circle 21. Welcome to the podcast, Isla. Could you give the listeners an overview of both your roles and how they will work alongside each other?
Hi, Laura. Yes. So at Opergy Scotland, we are a clean energy consultancy. We work across all clean energies, working with the public and the private sector, companies of all shapes and sizes, from developers, tier ones, and up and down the supply chain, helping them do more in clean energy or enter the clean energy market in the first place, going with fact rather than feeling. So we all know the offshore wind market is going to be massive, but is it truly going to be massive for this particular company or that company? And as you were saying, I also started a networking group called Full Circle 21, and that is encouraging more inclusivity and diversity within the clean energy sector. Not just because it's a good thing, it's definitely a good thing, but we need more people for all reasons that we can go on to talk about later on. But when I was progressing in the sector myself, I found that there just wasn't the opportunities for different individuals, and also myself and others lacked confidence to go for particular roles or presenting opportunities. So we looked at how we can encourage greater confidence building for individuals to be their best, but also to speak up and to not accept as the answer of that's just the way it is as an answer for any working in companies.
Thanks, Isla. So I'm also joined by my colleague, John McFarlane, who is a techno-economic analyst at ORE Catapult. We're really excited as John is off to Barcelona to represent Scotland at the Cerebral Palsy Football World Championships on the 12th of April. Big congratulations, John. How's the training been going?
Thanks, everyone, for inviting me on the podcast today. So, yep, I'm fairly new to the renewable sector, but I've enjoyed it so far. I've been involved quite heavily in inclusion and diversity since I've started and in my previous roles. On the training, it's been a tough few months, but what keeps me going is me and the rest of the boys are all training together, all working towards a goal, and hopefully we can do well at the World Champs. It's really important for me as a disabled individual to also represent my country and also represent disabled people on a kind of big stage. But also for me, it's important for me to represent disabled people in my job and in the workforce. And that's what I hope to get across today.
So I think one thing that we encourage in Full Circle 21 and that we're aware of is that people are scared to ask questions about, oh, I better not ask anything in case I offend somebody. So John, what is cerebral palsy? How does it show itself? How would I know you had cerebral palsy or would I not?
That really depends. I actually spoke on this at one of our strategy and emerging technology team briefs last week, because it was Cerebral Palsy Awareness Month in March. So cerebral palsy is a condition that's caused by a brain injury. It can affect people in all different ways. So it can be sort of categorised into different types of conditions. Some people are affected down the one side of the body. So for me, my right hand and right leg is affected. That's called hemiplegia. But there are all different types of cerebral palsy. And it's important to recognise that no two people are affected in the same way. Although people have similar symptoms and similar experiences, everyone is slightly different. It's a brain injury for me, and had it since birth. And then since birth, I've been able to work on myself to be able to try and improve the symptoms I experienced throughout my life. It's kind of a standard condition, but there's been research to show that symptoms can change throughout your life. But on the point about people are scared to ask questions, I totally agree. I had an experience in the gym 2 weeks ago where I was trying to change a connection to one of the machines. So, and it was difficult because you had to use two hands. But a younger man came up to me, I think he was about 18 or 19, and you could see him sort of tentatively walking over. He asked me if I needed help. And the first thing really for me was to say, no, it's okay. But then I took a second to pause and say, well, actually, get your pride out of the way. This person just trying to help. And I actually accepted the help. It was the first time I'd ever experienced somebody having the courage to come and ask me for help. And I think that's really on the disabled person to not react negatively to these questions and just be open and just, if anyone's got any questions, just answer them from the heart. And I try not to shut down anybody that's trying to help you. I totally agree on the questions, but I think that's really on the disabled person's side to deal with that in the most positive way possible.
No, thanks for that, John. And from an Ori Catapult side, I think hearing about your stories, kind of that lived experience brings a kind of new perspective to it for folk that haven't had that before. And it is in an interesting point how you're both speaking about that scared to ask questions, making sure you're being open. And that can be from all intersectionalities across like the range of diversity. So do you think there's any other challenges facing the renewable sector to take up that inclusion and diversity side? What would you say the main challenges are?
So I think, well, for me, we need more people. So the sector needs more people. It's growing. Although you do hear it go, oh, well, is it growing and when it's growing? So yes, we definitely need more people, but of different skills now as we will in 5 years' time. So for example, in offshore wind, there's a lot of projects at development stage. So we need a lot of people that can do those type of activities and that skill set now. It'll be different in 5 plus 10 years' time. We've got to understand that we're competing with lots of different industries for good people. So we need to be an attractive industry for people to come to. And once you're in there, you can flourish as well. And I also feel that at the moment, there's a bit of panic buying when it comes to recruiting people because it is rapidly growing and everybody wants somebody with experience. So how do you get that experience? So we need to have a bit more time and patience to train people up as well and stop fishing from the same pool. Because if you're always fishing from the same pool for the same people, you'll always get the same thing. There is an element of doing things differently, not just doing it the way we've always done it, and have more open mindsets about what our workplace and our colleagues should look and sound like.
Absolutely agree with that. I'm an economist, so a big piece of the work that I've been doing is on that in particular, on how much the workforce is going to grow in the renewable sector. On the different backgrounds part, that's really key. So for me, I don't come from a renewable background. I know also you don't either, Laura. I think at ORE Catapult, we've really done well in terms of showing and being clear on that you don't need to meet every criteria for applying for a job. You have to, maybe you meet some of the criteria, but there's also scope for you to learn whilst you're in the role. I think that's what I've really, really done since I've came to Catapult. I've done a PhD in economics, or I'm just about to finish a PhD in economics in a completely different industry. But some of these skills and the knowledge base that I've learned during that journey in education has benefited me in this role, although it's not directly related. You're right, we need a lot of people in the workforce. There's going to be a lot of opportunity for the workforce, but it's important that we capitalise that opportunity by incentivising all different people to come into the workforce. It's important that we get people from all backgrounds and of all parts of society, if you like, because everyone and every part of society will have different perspectives and we're an innovative industry. So it's extremely important that we capture all these different perspectives if we're going to really move forward and capture that economic opportunity that's quite obviously there in the offshore wind sector. So for me, it's one of the challenges is making sure that we hire enough people, but hire the right range of people. And I think if they do that, the sector has got a real opportunity to be life-changing for everybody in the UK.
I remember being at an event, and granted, it was more on gender. But one of the panel members were saying, oh, you know, well, we're just starting. And I'm kind of thinking, we're not just starting. We've had equal number of men and women on the planet since day one. So let's not keep replicating the mistakes of our ancestors by continuing to make the poor judgment and poor practice that they have. We need to do things differently. And yes, we're not going to change what's happened in the last 2,000 years over 2 years. But let's not be afraid to do things differently.
And Isla, have you seen from other industries any of these do things differently working well? And if so, what have these been?
It's difficult to compare ourselves because, well, I don't know what you guys think, but Can we compare ourselves with the tech industry only? Or you always hear about Google and Facebook, and they're a brilliant place to work, et cetera, et cetera. But in the energy sector, we'd have so many different jobs. And we've got people that go offshore, and we've got manufacturing jobs, and they are traditional jobs. And there's no bones about it. They're traditionally male-dominated roles. So it does take longer to change that. Whereas the marketing and PR jobs, they are more open and more diverse already. So they are easier, I say in brackets, to make more inclusive. But that doesn't mean we should give up on the other jobs that should be more inclusive as well. So I think it's difficult when we do compare ourselves, that we can compare ourselves to some industries, other sectors, and go, actually, we're much better than them. Aren't we doing great? But then if we look to the ones that we want to replicate, we've still got a long way to go. But there are plenty of areas out there and companies out there that are doing well. For example, as you were saying, the Catapult, I think, is doing pretty well. But we have to find other good examples that are more relatable to some other companies, because the Catapult's a big organization. So how does a small SME that employs 10, 15, 20 people compare themselves to the likes of the Catapult or the public sector? So can we draw out and find some good examples of small companies that are doing really well? And there are some out there. And I think my company is doing quite well, but we've got a long way to go. And equally, I suppose I can make excuses for small companies like myself to say, well, it's, you know, if you're that small, it really is quite difficult if you've got 5 employees to get them all very diverse. Well, actually, it's not really. It just depends what pool you're fishing from.
I think another big component of this is the application process and making role models like visible to people. It might be, as you say, Isla, some jobs are definitely in the past been male dominated, but it's important that people that are from different backgrounds can see that people from different backgrounds actually already work in the renewable sector, whether that be on things like this podcast, whether that be on panels, have that sort of role model to aspire to. That's really important, I think, the visibility.
Just on that, John, at what stage do you think it might get tiresome? So, for example, I don't think there are many people with visible disabilities. There's not that many of them in the renewable sector. You go to a conference, you can hardly see any. That's not to say there aren't any there. But how would you feel about almost becoming the poster child for disability in renewables? Doing it 2 or 3 times is fine. Would you be happy to do that? Or would you kind of go, enough already?
No. For me, I know that it could be tiring in some capacity, but honestly, from when I've turned an adult, I've been determined to raise awareness about the importance of having disabled people in the workplace and the importance of keeping disabled people in the workplace. I think that I would be more than happy to be that person, because I think I've really pushed barriers in terms of first person in my family to go to university. Well, me and my twin, I was definitely first person to do a master's and then do a PhD. I really felt that it was my duty in some way to push those boundaries, to prove to myself and other people that might look up to me that these things are possible. And then to move into the renewable sector, but as you say, Isla, there's a quite obvious lack of people with physical disabilities in the renewable sector, to be frank. I think that comes down to people with disabilities being confident enough to try their skills and apply to these jobs and not be scared in how people might perceive them. Sometimes you have to push yourself out of your comfort zone on the hiring side, and also for the people that are applying. That lived experience of having disabilities makes you be able to think out of the box and think differently about different problems, and feel that I have to do that every day, whether I realise it consciously or not. But that definitely, thinking outside the box, that definitely translates into helping me perform my job on a daily basis a lot better and come up with new innovative ideas and what the economics might look like, what are new ways of calculating a certain aspect of the offshore wind development. That's also why I play for the national team as well, because when I was growing up, I used to see the men that were initially in the Scotland Cerebral Palsy setup, I'd look up to them, and then I ended up training with them, and now I'm that person. So, yeah, in all aspects of my life, I really try and promote the fact that I've got a disability, but I also work in a sector which is sparkly grown. It's going to be really important, and I feel like I can carry out my duty as a techno-economic analyst as well as anyone else. So to come round your question, I'd be more than happy to be the poster boy for it.
It's really interesting to hear that side of it from a role model point of view. So I quite often speak about myself and my wife, mainly from a similar thing, John, to make sure that people know it's fine. There are people from LGBTQ plus communities within the renewable sector. And the reason I do it is because actually when I joined Ori Catapult, I was so nervous. I wasn't someone actually to speak about it. I didn't like being that role model. But then I was sitting in a meeting and another woman said, oh, my wife. And I thought, oh, that's just made me relax massively. And then I thought, I want to do this for other people. I want to be that person that people can look and go, it's fine. I'm in a good place. I'm in a good workforce. It's a good culture here. And it makes you want to stay and it makes you want to kind of be part of the movement. So I think it's really important. Something else you touched upon there was the non-linear route into renewables. And coming from forensics, I'm very similar, made that jump about 2.5 years ago. So kind of leads me on to do a wee shout out to the fact that Ori Catapult were named as one of the UK's best places to work. And I think that's evident when we speak about Ori Catapult, which is a nice thing. And also Isla, hearing from your side that from an outsider's perspective, that's the way it seems as well. There's a balance sometimes in how diversity and inclusion is implemented in companies from a top-down approach, but also making people want to get involved. It can be slightly easier, as you were mentioning, Isla, when it's slightly larger companies to have that kind of variety. But when you're working with an SME, when there's three people that's working on like the best ways to implement these things, whether that's through policies, whether that's through them having an understanding from day dot, so they're ready to scale up. So Isla, what would you say you want to see in the future? Like, how do we help those in leadership levels within companies and businesses to commit to these goals?
Well, there's a couple of things. Can we stop thinking of work as being Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, sitting at a desk? That's, again, a very traditional way of how we work. Society told us we had to be at the desk, we had to do this, and it's Monday to Friday. Well, maybe that doesn't work for everybody. We're thinking that you have to be committed and you have to be dedicated to do your work. You can be, but you can have other commitments that you need to balance as well. The initial assumption was, oh, it's working mothers. Well, actually, it's working everybody's, have different commitments and different things that we need to take care of. So can we stop thinking about that? I get it that project teams benefit from being together and individuals benefit from being together. So can we look at other ways of individuals working together and being flexible? But again, it's also, I would like to lead by examples and show some good practice of what companies are doing. Can we highlight the companies that are highly profitable, happy employees as well? I think that's important because, quite frankly, I know I can never compete with the likes of the developers when it comes to salaries. But actually, if I can compete with having a happy team, then that's super important to me as well. So can we look at why we are all in business as well? Yes, everything has to have commercial success. Everybody at work surely wants to be happy and enjoy what they're doing. So let's find those key examples and highlight them and applaud the leaders that are doing the right thing, not just the ones that are making the most money, but the ones that are changing the way they work and the way their companies operate to allow it to be more inclusive. Even the little small steps and not accepting that's just the way it is as the answer.
Bringing it back to economics for me again, but there's a broad economic literature that suggests that people that are happy at work are more productive. And if people are more productive at work, then at the end of the day, they're going to be profit maximising. As you say, Isla, people have very busy lives and they're more likely to work at a more productive level if they know that their employer trusts them to be flexible with their time and carry out the tasks that they have to carry out. But on the productivity thing, at the end of the day, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that the happier people are at work, the more productive they're going to be. I think it's about time that employers start to read some of that information because it's in their own interest to help support their employees in the best ways that they can. It's a really important point you touch on there, Isla. And do you think the renewables energy sector in general is getting better at that? Or do you think that there's a lot of improvements that are still to be made?
I do see that at senior levels, there are certainly more gender splits, ethnic minorities, less so, disabilities, as I say, a very small handful of disabilities. So we are getting there, but there's still so much room for improvement. And just to what you were mentioning about the economic benefits, you're right that companies that are more inclusive and are more diverse outperform ones that aren't as well. So it's not just morally and legally the right thing to do. Commercially, it makes more sense to have a more diverse workforce. We also need to lead by example as well. So what's the phrase about positive discrimination? I think we still have room for positive discrimination, to see it, to be it. While we're not fully inclusive, there is room for positive discrimination. Once we are, there's no need for it. But I think we do need to show that people of all shapes, sizes, colours, creeds can be positions of all levels in a company. So let's look at positively doing that.
But what I think would really help with that from the disability standpoint is if we have some workshops for specifically physically disabled people to come, and whether that's shadow someone for a day, whether that's coming to careers events that are for disabled people only. I'm just speaking from the disability, but this is across all different intersections, all different societies. We should do more of this. But I think having that encouragement of that group of people to apply for different jobs would really help. I mean, for example, cerebral palsy is the most common childhood disability in the UK. And when you look at that compared to the people that are in the workforce and then in our workforce, that number is not represented in any way, shape or form. I don't know anybody else in the renewable sector that has cerebral palsy. Hopefully there is, but I've definitely not came across that. So I think we could really do more in terms of, as an industry, in terms of having career workshops, showing people that there are jobs available for them and they should be applying for them. Because, as I mentioned, disabled people are innately a wee bit insecure. And sometimes at interview stages, there's a lot of nerves, as it is for everybody, but probably more so for disabled people. So what might help with that aspect is that you have an informal chat with your line manager or whatever. So I done that with Tom, who, by the way, has been the most supportive person that I've probably ever experienced in the workforce. Then we had an informal chat, then we had an interview over the phone, then we had an in-person interview. And these three interviews meant that he could really get a real picture of what I can bring to the team, and without it being like a one-off occasion where you have to perform well, you have to be able to answer all the questions in the right way. I think that also would really help, and that be extra wee bit of support for disabled people, even at the interview stage. Because I genuinely feel that disabled people can bring a lot to this workforce. In fact, I know that they should. So it's important that we look to that to try and make the workforce more diverse, to improve the renewables energy workforce, but also gather the skill sets that disabled people can bring.
I think that's a great idea. Particularly as you were mentioning about workshops and shadowing jobs, just to see what it's like for both sides of the party. There's no bones about it. A particular job can be life-changing. So let's make it more comfortable, more approachable thing, particularly if we are trying to be more inclusive. Let's do things differently.
And I think that leads nicely on to, I suppose, the full circle 21 piece, Isla. John's probably given a lot of ideas about what we could do in the future, but it'd be good just to hear what else is coming in the coming months for Full Circle 21.
So I've taken lots of notes, and we're going to be working with John on disability and shadowing. We are also working with Anderson Strathairn. So we've got a How EDI event coming up in Aberdeen. We know that being inclusive and diverse is a great idea, but how do you actually do that for companies? So that is for individuals of all, it doesn't just have to be for HR individuals, but it's individuals to come and learn, because that's what I also think. Making a company and helping a company become more inclusive and diverse is not just for HR, it's for everybody. Everybody has their part to play, whether or not you are the stereotypical older white man or not. We need people that are going to help make the change. So that's that. We also got a few what we call brunch on tour, which I know sounds incredibly middle class, but there you go. And that's just our networking opportunity that we go to either cafes, restaurants, or if it's on tour, we go to companies. So we've got one coming up with Oceaneering at Rosyth, and then other things that are coming in the diary, encouraging more confidence of our members as well, to build their confidence, to be their best, and to go for whatever that may be in the next step in their career, either first step on the ladder in their career or promoted posts or changing and going into a different sector. And we're really keen to do more. So if there's anything else that anybody would like to have us do, then please shout out, because one thing about Full Circle 21 is it's always going to be free, whatever we do, because we don't want that to be a barrier either.
Great. Thanks for that, Isla. And I suppose last question for you, John. With the 12th of April coming up, is there any backstory you'd like to give any listeners on your engagement with Cerebral Palsy Scotland, your love of football, or how this has turned into being that role model that you are?
So CP Scotland, Cerebral Palsy Scotland, they used to be called Bobath Scotland. I first went to Cerebral Palsy Scotland when I was 2 years old. And at that point, I couldn't walk yet. And after 6 weeks of intense physiotherapy, when I was two, I was taking my first steps. That's extremely life-changing, that in itself. But then for the next 18 years until I was 20, I attended Cerebral Palsy Scotland for a 6 week block of intense physiotherapy. What I learned over that time is, no matter what you think your potential is, you can always push a wee bit further than that. And the physio would really help me to understand that, but also put me through my phases in terms of achieving that. And then when I turned 18, I realised that in terms of policy, that support for people with cerebral palsy really disappears. And I spoke a little bit about this at Parliament. I think that there's an organisation called the UP Movement, and I met the founder and CEO of the UP Movement at that parliamentary discussion. There's a lot of challenges for disabled people in the workforce, as we've spoken about throughout, but there's also a big challenge about keeping disabled people in the workforce. So sometimes symptoms can change. Sometimes there's complications, including pregnancy, which means that when people with cerebral palsy that are pregnant can sometimes experience more complications in childbirth, and then it might take them longer to come back to work, for example. That's one example, and employers need to be aware of that and support that and make sure that there's no blockers in getting the people back into the workforce. And that's just one example, but there's a lot. But since I've turned 18, I've been an ambassador for Cerebral Palsy Scotland. So I've tried to be as public as I can about my experiences there, because if it wasn't for them, then who knows, I might not be able to walk. I might not have the opportunities that I have had in terms of education. And I might not have had the beliefs that I could push past what others might perceive to be my potential onto the football. Football's my passion in my life. And I remember when I played in mainstream football in primary school. Then when I went to high school, I tried to trial for the mainstream football team and didn't get in. But then I wanted to keep playing football. So a person from the SFA came and spoke and asked me to go along to train with Cerebral Palsy Scotland's football team. It was really the first time in my life when I'd met other people with similar challenges to me and the same severity of challenges as me. That real sense of community has made us a real strong team, both on the field but also off the field. It's a real family, I think, is what I would call it. And I think like we've been extremely successful in terms of world rankings in the last World Championships. We got to the final and get beat. And at that time, we had a major sponsor, but now we don't have a major sponsor. This time, we had to raise money for the tournament on our own, which is abysmal, I think, given how well we do and the importance of cerebral palsy football for people with cerebral palsy. In comparison to other nations, we have very, very limited funding. So it's important for the survival of the programme that we do have a major sponsor soon. And we're trying different avenues together. If you want to see a group of individual people that face challenges every day but overcome their challenges, play football at a high level, then come and watch the rest of the boys, not me, but everyone else. But back to this, the theme of this podcast is the offshore renewable industry has got a lot of challenges that we have to overcome to meet these ambitious targets that the government has set. And having role models is a must, because if we don't see ourselves represented in any comms, then how can we aspire to be there? In my opinion, we should give disabled people a greater recognition in the skills and abilities. Although they have disabilities, they also have abilities, and we should be more aware of the skills that the disabled people possess. Because of the lived experience that I've faced, I can think out of the box, I'm creative, but I'm also intelligent, I'm also driven for change, and want to be part of the change that benefits society in general, whether that's through speaking about my disability, and also my contribution in the workforce. And if we can get the most diverse group of people that we need in the workforce, then that uphill battle that we face in terms of deployment and meeting net zero targets can become a little less steep.
And I do think that love of things outside of work and that work-life balance is so important. Just that sense of self and like being able to push yourself forward. So it's been great to speak to you both today. I think some of the top things that I've picked up throughout on is don't be scared to ask questions. So make sure you're asking those questions. Don't be afraid to take that space. So if you see an opportunity that you think that you should go for, just do it. What's the worst that can happen? And John, to finish with what you said there, always push past what you think your potential is and just keep it going. So Isla and John, thank you for taking part in this episode of the Re-Energise podcast. It has been great conversation today on some really key points that impact our industry. It's now time to de-energise until next month. In the meantime, listeners can find more about ORE Catapult activities at ore.catapult.org.uk. And don't forget to follow us on our social media channels on LinkedIn, X, formerly Twitter, and Instagram at ORE Catapult.